Hey, it's the second day of June 2016. I'm Joe Stevens, and today we are visiting with Carol, with two R's, and Roy Williams. Carol, I'm going to start with you. Where were you born? Where did you grow up? Tell me about those years up through high school.
Okay, Joe. I was born in East L.A., like Cheech and Chong. I shouldn't say that, but I can't. I tell my kids that every time. Okay, I came over to Arizona. We stopped in Phoenix when I was about 4 years old. And my folks heard about Prescott, and they went to Prescott. And we stayed there, and I went through school in Lincoln School in Prescott, Arizona, until we graduated, and I graduated in 1956.
Okay. And Roy, how about you? Same question.
Well, I was born in Las Vegas, New Mexico in 1930. My dad and mother were ranchers, and all my grandparents were ranchers. And we starved out in New Mexico and had to leave during a drought time. We came to Arizona in 1937. We came over to Eagle Creek, where one of my aunts had a ranch. And my dad went to work for the Devil Circles. And we stayed there until the Second World War started. And I had an uncle that was an equipment operator, and he worked all over the country. And so he got my dad working as an equipment man at Morenci when they were building a smelter. So we moved to Clifton in about 1940, somewhere like that. And I went to the first two or three grades of school. Well, I went to a one-room schoolhouse on Eagle Creek until about the fourth grade. So then we followed construction all during the Second World War, and my mother had asthma pretty bad, and one of my aunts had a house in Prescott. So sometime along about when I was in about the seventh grade, we moved to Prescott, and that's where we stayed. So I finished high school in Prescott in 1949, and then I went in the military in the Air Force during the Korean War. And when I came back home, I found her, and she was young, sweet, and pretty, and she's pretty dumb, so she married me.
Yeah, right. Okay, so where were you in Korea?
I wasn't in Korea. I was one of those fortunate people. When I enlisted in the Air Force, it was in December of 1950, and we went to Lackland Air Force Base, and right after the first of the year, they had such an influx of new recruits that they moved us all around the country, and I just happened to be in a group that got sent to Davis-Monthan Air Force Base. And so I got in Strategic Air Command, and I was stationed in Davis-Monthan, and we went to England on a TDY, and on that TDY we went down to North Africa for a little while, and then came back. But being in SAC, we stayed mostly in Tucson all those years, and I got out in 1954. So anyway, that's my military stories. I never done anything exciting except load bombs and unload bombs and that kind of thing.
Okay, so we know when you met. How long was your courtship? When were you married? And you were living in Prescott at the time.
Yeah. Well, I'd gotten out of the military, and I was working for a guy named Richie Lewis, and he's the guy that got me into Arizona Public Service Company. And so Richie Lewis was quite well known around this part of the country. In 1925 or 26, he was world's champion saddle bronc rider, and he was in the original Turtles and all that kind of stuff. So anyway, he lived right across the street from Carol. Well, she was a horse nut, and Richie had some horses and stuff, and she don't even remember meeting me, but I remember meeting her. Richie had a Texas gate into his fence, and she was trying to open it. And
I had a horse that we were taking over to Richie because it was lame. And
anyway, I jumped out of the pickup and run and opened the gate for her, and that was on a Saturday. And they had an Odd Fellows dance Saturday night, and she happened to be at that dance, and I happened to be at that dance, and she never got loose after that.
Okay, and you were married when?
1956.
Yep, September 15th. Payday.
All right. So then did you come to the Valley to work for APS?
I was working in the Valley for APS at that time. I was going through an apprenticeship. And so we got about $120 every payday, which was twice a month. And so Carol got a job at a chicken ranch out in what's Paradise Valley now, but it was way out in the boonies.
32nd Street and Greenway.
And she got her house and $80 a month and our utilities and everything. So actually, she's probably making more money than I was. But I got acquainted with a guy who was a coach at Glendale High School, Earl Gieske, and he had some registered quarter horses. Well, he wanted somebody to break those horses, so Carol and I took that job on, and then she showed some of the horses for Earl and Helen Gieske. That would have been between 56 and probably 1960, somewhere along in there. I graduated from my apprenticeship in 1959, and so we tried to get back to Prescott, but I couldn't buy a job in Prescott with APS. So eventually I had to take a job in Flagstaff. So we wound up, and Earl kind of willed us, what, four or five of those horses, those quarter horses?
Yeah, we moved over to Glendale, and he showed us this place. It was the Basco people, sheep herders, Marcus's, very well known down there around Glendale. And he knew them, and so we rented a house from them until Dobie was born. That was between September after we left the chicken ranch.
It would have been in 58.
Yeah, he was born 58, July.
And then you went to Flagstaff?
We went to Flagstaff in 1960, and we stayed up there, but it was one of those jobs with APS where I was out of town 2 weeks and back home two days. And I was at Page when they poured the first pour of concrete, and I just happened to be at Page when they poured the last one. But
on the dam.
Yeah, on the dam. But when we first went up to Page, we were staying in a camp, and it was pretty, pretty rough and pretty remote. And that old blow sand up there, every night when you came in, even though we were staying in buildings, mobile buildings, but you had to shake the sand out of your sheets because it'd be full of red sand. And so we put power line into Tuba City and on eventually over into out of Holbrook up north to I can't think of the name of the little town right now. But anyway, we went mostly across the Hopi Reservation putting in power lines. And so subsequently, I got to be the union steward for all of northern Arizona. And that was one of those really nice, thankless kind of jobs you get. Anyway, on the strength of that, I became the first paid assistant business manager of the local union, but that was in Phoenix. So at that time we were living in Joseph City, so
that
we had to move back to Phoenix.
Yeah.
And that was 62.
Yeah, well, Charlie was born in 62, so it was a year after 63, yeah.
Anyway, we moved back to Phoenix, and I worked for 18 months or thereabouts as assistant business manager. And that being a political job and me not being a politician didn't work very well. And so I decided that I'd just go outside, which would be in construction. And so Carol and I, we followed the construction trade for quite a few years. And that's in between times, we always, in our mind, we always had a ranch. So somewhere about 1966, we got the Bonine Ranch over here in a partnership with a guy from Texas. And we were there about 2 years.
Where is that located?
Well, the Bonine Ranch is just west of Lake Pleasant. That was before this highway. Morristown Cutoff came through there. So there's 110 sections inside one fence. And no,
along the Beardsley Canal, and the upper part was along by Layton's.
Okay.
So anyway, that's when we got acquainted with Irene Evans, and she had this ranch that neighbored us on the west side, And I used to meet her and old Riley, her man foreman guy, every Friday night. We were building a transmission line from Las Vegas down to Phoenix, down to Liberty. So every Friday night I'd be coming home, and they'd had a fish fry here. Well, Carol didn't know Irene Evans, and if you'd never met Irene Evans, she was one of those kind of people that would call you just exactly what she was, right straight to your face. And she probably weighed about maybe 85 pounds with her pockets full of rocks, and she was somewhere probably in her 70s at that time. One of the best friends that we had, and between her and another guy that was pretty well known around Wickenburg here, would have been Lori Olea, and he had a ranch that was down on the southwest side of the Bonine. So Lori helped us get accustomed to ranching on the desert. Having grown up with cattle and knowing a lot about them, we always had this ranch in mind. So over the years, we just kept working and buying a little piece of property and trading it for something bigger. And we had, John Hillegas, at one point in time, after we had this ranch, our oldest son, Dobie, got shot when he was 14 years old accidentally. So John was a vascular surgeon that did the work on Dobie. And you could never ask for a better doctor. And we have a walking, talking, living miracle in our life. Not that we haven't had many more, but that one was probably the most heartbreaking in a way. But it was something. Anyway, we got in the ranching business. We had this little ranch out here, and John wanted to, he had to have a ranch. So this wasn't big enough to be able to do anything, so we went together with John and a couple other people, and we bought a ranch at Payson, which is a Turtle Rock, and then we bought into the Santa Maria out here on the Santa Maria River, and that wasn't enough. We got to...
Well, that didn't pan out. Yeah, it was in escrow, but it didn't work, so...
Anyway, we wound up buying the 76 ranch at Rye. After we were there a couple of 3 years, the partnership dissolved, in the best words I can use. Anyway, they bought Carol and me out, and so we moved back here to this ranch. But then it wasn't but just a little while after that, just a few months, even if it was that many months, I was back working in construction because we had to have money to eat with. So before we got into all this ranching stuff, we'd been following construction, and I'd worked for a guy I'd worked for him here in Arizona on that Liberty transmission line, but we went to Pennsylvania and worked for him, Henry Campbell, and then later on we went into New York State and did a couple of jobs in New York. Well, his nickname was KY. Anyway, he had a little company up in Anchorage, Alaska, and somebody told me about him, and I was working up in northern Arizona, but it was just like a 10-day or a 15-day job. And so I got his phone number. I don't know how I got his phone number, but anyway, I called Henry up in Anchorage, and he said, "I could use you. How soon can you get here?" So I called Carol, and it was on a Sunday. And
I was in the Mormon church, and I get this call. "You get all my clothes packed and meet me in town." And so he left.
So anyway, what happened is I called the Mormon church because we had foster children at that time.
And that's why we were
part
there
of them were going to the Mormon church, and part of them were going to Southern Baptist church. One of the things that we insisted with the people we took the foster children from is that they'd have to go to church on Sundays. So we'd bring them in from the ranch and distribute them to the Catholic church or the Mormon church or the Baptist church. And we had, four of those children at that time? So anyway.
This is mid-60s?
Mm-hmm.
Mid-60s time frame?
It would have been... Probably by then it would have been in the 70s.
Well, we had them at the... We got our first ones at the 76. That's when we first got them.
Yeah.
And then they stayed with us, different ones, because they rotated once they got to be 18. What was the problem is two of them were from the Baptist Children's Home, and the other two were Department of Corrections. And what was the matter is when they get to be kind of teenagers, they had a little trouble with them, trying to hold them in the facility there at Baptist Children's Home, so they were giving them something to calm them down. And so they were looking for somebody to take kids about 16 to 17 so that when they got 18, they could go and do. And that's the ones we got from there, that's basically what they were. And then the ones from the Department of Correction basically was the same thing. They were just kids that would run away, but they weren't bad guys, you know. And so we had them until they got to be 18 or whatever.
Do you still have any contact with any of the four?
Once in a while we get, and one of them we have is an Indian boy who is actually adopted by my husband's brother, Sean Williams. But he came to live with us because it was hard for him to, when he got up to teenager, then he realized he's
Apache.
He's Apache. He went Apache on us. So
that's a story in itself. My brother Jerry and his wife Barbara were high school sweethearts, and they got married right out of high school. And Barbara passed away, 2 years ago? Anyway, it was something over 60 years they lived. Well, they had two natural children, a boy and a girl, and she had another little girl that died right after birth. Well, she was going through a pretty tough time, and my brother and her decided that they'd try to adopt somebody to take that person's place. So they went over to Globe and was going to adopt this little Indian girl. Well, when they get over there, this little Indian girl had a brother that was like 18 months old, and she was like 3 or 4 months old. Anyway, the little brother had a broken leg, and his mother was an alcoholic and a bunch of stuff. So Jerry and Barbara, instead of just taking one, they took two. And unfortunately, the little girl, Kim, she inherited that alcohol stuff from her mother. And in fact, she just passed away about 2 or 3 weeks ago down in Texas. And my brother's all worked up over it because she had a couple of 3 children, and she married to another guy. And
I think she's married to a good guy who kept
the
kids.
The guy took the children and just let her go because she just kept staying messed
up. He was an Anglo. She Apache.
Anyway, that's an aside to all this other stuff.
But that's how we got the Indian boy. Well, we had another one, a Navajo boy, half Navajo, and he was Kevin Billy, and he stayed with us a long time even after. He's up with his, I think he's probably with his mom now in
White River.
She was a nurse at.
She's a nurse practitioner and she was a Caucasian married to a Navajo. And the Navajo was an alcoholic, and he was a surveyor, and he got killed in an automobile wreck. And
that's how we got Kevin.
They had 4 kids, Kevin being the oldest, and his mother couldn't handle him. Well, there wasn't anything really wrong with Kevin, except he was about 16 or 17 years old.
Well, he missed his dad, and she just had a lot of problem with the fact that the Indian part of him, he couldn't help being who he was, but.
Right, exactly.
So, anyway.
It's all good, though, yeah.
And we had one other girl, Barbara McGinnis, when we went to Alaska.
She went with us, yeah.
She went to Alaska with us when.
Now, we're getting a little ahead here because you were on the ranch outside of Lake Pleasant.
Yeah.
Now, when did you acquire the ranch?
Bought this ranch in
1972,
March or April. We took possession of it, I think, in May.
April 15th is when we got the final papers. We bought it from the Marvin and Vera Davis. And it was the old Goodwin Ranch. And then Marvin and Vera bought it from
Boyd Tinney.
Boyd Tinney, and then we bought it from.
And you have, what, 80 acres of private?
Yeah. We have 80 acres of private land, and Carol's cousin has an adjacent 80 acres, so there's 160 acres.
And then how much do you lease?
Roughly 15 sections are inside the fence, so there's part of it is BLM, part of it is state, and there's some state or private mining mm-hmm. property inside the fence.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So anyway, we're kind of getting all messed up here, but what happened, that's how we got the Hallelujah people. When I went to Alaska, I can't never stay very long away from her. So I was up there probably, about six weeks. And I got on the phone, and again, we had to go through Warmed Over Death to find a telephone so we could talk to each other.
Yep.
So I told her, I don't care what you do with that ranch, but I want you and the kids to get up here. So she sent Dobie and Charlie, the two oldest boys, Marie and Fred, stayed here with her. And that's how we got the Hallelujah people involved in it, because she was looking for somebody to take care of the ranch. And Hallelujah is over there someplace by Angel Morales, so I don't know exactly where.
Yeah, they were at Stanton, yeah. But they, how I met them is they come to the church, and we were at the church, and they were singing, and then there was going to be a wedding. So I went to this wedding, and there was a couple that got married, and I thought, well, maybe they'd like to come and just stay on the ranch for a part of the cattle. And so that was the deal, but we ended up then the whole tribe.
Okay, we need to back up and talk about who were the Hallelujah people. Where did they come from?
Well, I'm not exactly sure where they originated, but they came here out of Florida.
Okay.
And Jack and...
Elephant. And
Jack
Elephant
and Margo were the prime movers. And Jack...
They had a bunch of kids...
Well, what they were doing is they were taking Vietnam War vets that were on drugs and everything, and they were taking them, and Jack and Margo was taking them off of drugs. And what they do is bring them out there to the ranch, and the first thing they did is disable their car so they couldn't run away. So then they basically took them off of drugs, cold turkey, and then finally, eventually... They had a bunch of them working out here on the farms in Aguila and everything. And it was kind of like that Jimmy Jones deal in South America. Old Jack Oliphant got to thinking he was the only guy that could talk to God. And so they had, I don't know, quite a few of them, because all those old buses and all the stuff that's still out there is where they were living. Anyway, Jack Oliphant went out to the farmers out in where they were working. He said, I want those men's check in my hand.
This is at the end. This
and
is what
so they told the farmer told Jack, well, you didn't earn them, and you're not going to get them. We're going to give them to the men. So anyway, along about what we'd done is we had sold the ranch to the Hallelujah. Jack flew up to Alaska and met with us. And so we sold the ranch to him after they'd all moved over there to the ranch.
There wasn't much choice.
And anyway, to make a long story short,
we
owed money to the Farmers Home Administration, and they were supposed to pay us a certain amount every month. Half of it was supposed to go to the Farmers Home Administration, half to us. Well, after about 2 years, we find out that the title company was in... Didn't do what they were supposed to.
Yeah.
They sent us our check every month, but they didn't ever have any money to send to the...
And
so we wound up owing, I don't know, several thousand dollars in back payments to the Farm Home Administration.
And what they were going to foreclose on us unless we...
Came up with the money.
So anyway, to make a long story short, all but about 30 head of the cattle had been dissipated. They'd either eaten them or sold them or whatever. So when I came down, and I had an attorney in Prescott, and I went to see him before I came down here, and he said, Roy, don't go down there because they're going to send a SWAT team in there to clean them out. This is the first I'm hearing about all these kind of things, you know. But anyway, old Jack had gotten in some kind of a big argument with some miner and pulled a shotgun out of his pickup and shot himself tore his elbow all up and everything.
That was before he moved to the ranch, so.
Anyway, all this stuff went on. And so when my attorney said, don't go down there, so then I went over to see Bob White. He had owned a Hozoni at that time. And so I borrowed a horse from Bob White, and he went with me, and we rode down to the top of the mountain where we could look over, and I'd never seen so much junk in my life. Because it had been a pristine, pretty nice little place without anything on it except that house and that old bunkhouse. Not the one that's there now, but that little old metal one. Anyway, to make a long story short, that was a disaster because we were out of cattle and we didn't have the money to do anything with.
We didn't know that at the time, and what we did to solve the situation, and God bless Roy's sister, she came, he went back to Alaska. But we wrote a letter to the Wickenburg paper, and we had a meeting right down here in the community building, and Jack Oliphant and his people and the Farm Home Administration came down, and then we, and if Jack would have backed off and let somebody, if somebody would have took over, you know, his, they would have probably let him keep it. But he wouldn't, and nobody else wanted to be involved, so we had to take it back. But we had that meeting down here, and that, because there was a lot of this confusion about whether we were the bad guys or, you know, because there's a lot of people really believed what they were doing, and that's the way we were. So anyway, that's how that went. But we got it back, and it was a little exciting when Charlie and I went down there the first night, and they were still pulling out with all our kids. And one of the little kids hollers that, well, that night they came back in, they needed a string of lights. And Charlie and I had come down in his little van, and he had a bed in it, and I had a cot on the outside. Yeah. And these kids come in, and whoever was driving was an adult-type person anyway. But they were scared because they thought maybe we'd shoot them, you know. And so Charlie was in the background. He didn't know what they were going to do. And we finally got that. It's all good. Everything is fine. And you can get your lights. And they left. And that was the last time we saw them except.
What year was that?
That was in 1982, wasn't it?
I think so, somewhere about like that, 82.
Yeah, well, I came back from Alaska in 82 anyway, so it was, yeah.
Now, you said Marie and Fred. Mm-mm. When did they come along?
Okay, Dobie, Marie, Charlie, Fred.
Ah, okay. So Marie is in
the baby,
between.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, the other thing that was interesting when we first moved there, that was because it's a long way into school, we went up and applied to the Yavapai County District, and they let us homeschool at the ranch, and that's what we did with the kids for 4 or 5 years till
and what they had till to
we,
do
till we moved to Payson.
Carol had to take them over to Champy School every 6 weeks, and they had to be examined by a licensed school teacher. But because Carol and I both had graduated from high school in Prescott, and the guy that was
the superintendent
of education had been one of our teachers, so he knew us from all of that stuff behind. So he's a guy, he really helped us because he told us what correspondence school to get. We'd heard about it, but we didn't really know it was the best kind, but it was one out of Baltimore.
Calvert's Home School.
And anyway, it was really a good school, and so the kids really got a better education out of that than they probably would have gotten. But eventually, after we came back from Payson and we took the ranch back, old Marie drove back and forth to school from the ranch and hauled the kids in and out of school here in Wickenburg, but they were all in high school then. But she had the foster kids plus our kids, and Billy Stewart was the livestock inspector, and when all these things happened to us, we met all these really good, fine folks around Wickenburg here. I'll give you a little aside with Angel Morales. Before we bought the the Bonine Ranch, which was at Lake Pleasant about, this would have been about 1965 or somewhere along in there. We had been in partners with this family in Flagstaff, Ted Webster. Well, in 1967, they had a great big snow up there. And Teddy had a bunch of cattle, but they couldn't get out to them at parks where they were at for about 3 or 4 weeks till they broke the road open so they could get there. Well, the old cows were about this wide. They were still alive, but they were not very big. And we had a little farm in Cashin, so Teddy and I hauled all those cattle down there and put them on that irrigated pasture.
Where is this?
This was in Cashin.
107th Avenue in Cashin.
South of Avondale, okay. And east of Avondale. Anyway.
That was between Joseph City and the ranch.
That was along about the time I was the business manager.
Yeah, okay.
Anyway, Teddy was because he needed to replace the cows that had died up there and everything. So he found about 60 or 70 head of Angus cows and bought them, but I didn't have enough room for them to be pastured on our place. So at first we thought we'd try to get them put at, and I had a friend, Cowboy Barnett, who'd went to school here in Wickenburg, him and his brother. And so he knew Angel Morales. And I asked Cowboy if he knew anywhere we could find some pasture. And he said, well, why don't you go see Angel Morales? So he told us how to find Angel's place up there where that's at. And we came over here, all our kids and Ted and Bonnie and their kids. And here's this Mexican about as wide as he is tall, and he's a sawing wood with a buzz saw. And all of his little kids are just one, two, three, like stair steps about like ours.
And he had a big hat on.
And he had this great big old hoss hat on. Anyway, Angel was just really told us that, well, he didn't have enough pasture to take the number of cattle that we wanted to put there. But he told us about Cynthia Earle, which had the two shoes over there on near Lake Pleasant. So Ted went over and made a deal with Cynthia to run the cattle on the two shoes until he could go back to his property up near Flagstaff in the spring. And so we had to brand all those Angus cattle and all this kind of stuff and had a pretty good time of doing that. And I'd helped and kind of been in partners with Teddy on a bunch of different things, cattle and stuff. And so when I think it was that either that year or the next winter, he leased this Navy gunnery range down by Gila Bend. And so we put all his cattle down there, and they had a big old windmill and a water tank and everything there, and that's the hottest water you ever saw in your life. And we went down there about the end of May, about this time of the year, together those cattle, and we had always had these good registered horses. So I had a horse named Red Man, and we went down together these cattle. Well, it about the same temperature it is today, and we'd rode all morning.
92 degrees.
We got there about 4 o'clock in the morning. We gathered a bunch of these cattle and everything. We rode up to this windmill. And this old horse I was riding, Red Man, he stuck his head down in that trough and just right up to his eyebrows almost, and he just pulled his head up like this and blew, boom, like that. Well, the wind was blowing, and the water was running out of this sandpipe into this tank. And there was a little old can hanging there, and I knew that can was somebody had been getting a drink of water here. So I got a can full of that water, and it was so hot I couldn't hardly hold that can. And so I took a taste of that, and then I was all done the same thing. So Teddy and I, we came back to Gila Bend and bought a 50-gallon barrel and filled it full of water so we could water our horses while we gathered those cattle and got them back to
Flagstaff. How did the cattle manage with that water?
What's that?
How did the cattle manage with that?
Oh, they got used to it. I'm sure in the beginning they didn't like that water at all, but it was one of those years when the grass was pretty green and everything was pretty good down there.
Was it salty?
Uh-huh. Honey, it had
alkali.
What's that stuff that makes your teeth go brown?
Oh, Fluorine.
Fluoride.
Fluoride.
Oh. It's full of fluoride. That really? Water just... And I'm telling you, that was kind of interesting. But anyway, we...
That was before we got the ranch. All that happened.
Yeah, that was... We still had that place in Cashin. Anyhow, that's kind of where it's at. And the people that we've known and done business with here in Wickenburg have been really good to us all the years that we've been here in Wickenburg. Is we started off with Leon Powell and his group. They had a service station over there, and we dealt with them for a lot of years.
Where McDonald's is today, on the other side of the river.
Well, it's right there where McDonald's is now.
Right.
And then they had a tire shop over here on this side of town, over here.
Down on North Tegner.
Yeah. So anyway, Leon and that group of guys, we knew them really well. And then we knew Ben Billingsley and his family, and that was before they had the saddle shop. I think Ray Bybee had a saddle shop before Ben. Anyway, they had the big corral up here, and we used to buy feed from them.
And the big corral is right along Tegner and Saul's Wash.
Yeah, right.
It's now a roping arena.
Yeah.
Yeah, we used to get hay from them right there.
Right.
Yeah.
So anyway, we eventually...
Her name is Claudia, right?
Yeah, Claudia and Ben.
Yeah.
And anyway, Bo was just a tiny
baby.
And Claudia was running the feed store and everything. And Ben, he was shoeing horses and doing all kinds of stuff. I don't know if his uncle or whoever it was bought this ranch out here west of town was over here then, but it was about the time they started ranching over here.
Tate Creek.
Paul Billingsley, and it would be the one at...
Date Creek, isn't it? Date Creek Ranch?
No.
Date Creek
OX?
Or...
No, it's a,
the...
No,
four
it's, down, it's the one out here just...
Four Paw.
Oh, Four Paw, okay.
So, Irene Evans was probably the first one, and Lori Olea. And then Billy Stewart, he was a livestock inspector, and
he was really a good guy,
wonderful, good friend of ours. And Roach Roberts had this little place out here, and he was a retired livestock inspector. And I got to tell him this story. Well, you may not want to publish it, but when we bought our ranch, Lloyd and Audrey Hankins they were running the JV bar. And, of course, we'd known Irene from years before. But Lloyd and Audrey threw a party for us to get acquainted with all the people in this area.
The Laytons and the...
And we knew the Laytons slightly. So anyway, they had the Laytons, and they had Irene Evans, and they had Roach Roberts, and they had...
I can't remember the name of the people that lived right there just out of town. You know?
Yeah, well, that was... His son, I think, is the running the shooting range out there now. Ed Brackney.
Yeah.
Anyway, Ed and his wife were there, and so Audrey took those big tomato cans that are about this high and baked everybody a loaf of bread. Well, Irene being Irene, when Carol and I walked in, of course, she gave us a big hug and all that kind of stuff, and she said, "Roy, I got to tell you," says, "we all come here and got bread." So, anyway.
The way she said it was really funny. Yeah. It was so Irene.
Yeah. And
so, how many, going back to the ranch, how many cattle will BLM allow you to run?
Well, I think the rule of thumb is about 64 acres per cow. But they don't want to flatten the ranch all out. They want to just go by line of sight. So if you flatten that ranch out, we've probably got about 50 square miles.
Right.
But what they're leasing to us is 15 square miles. So our permits call for 109 head of cows and 2 horses. And then we got a 10% carryover for the calves, the heifers,
well,
that we want to keep.
We have some private land in there.
We got a couple of three pieces of private land that's inside. And we never have tried to overgraze it or anything like that. Now, the guy that we bought it from was running about 280 cows on it. And I think Boyd Tenney had run that many on it. But the problem with it is just like right now is the water situation.
Yep. So dry.
And since the 94, when they made it wilderness, they got the operational agreement made by 96, and we have to keep the cattle off the river in the summertime. And that's crazy because you can't do it. Those old cows are born and raised there. It's 10 or 15 degrees cooler down on that water. Besides, you got 5 miles of irrigated Bermuda grass, and it's just a never-ending battle. But anyway, that's basically what we're allowed to run.
Now, is that a cow calf, or is that just one?
That's a cow calf.
Okay, 100 cow calf.
Well, it's 100 breeding age cattle. So the calves don't
count.
They don't count.
Yeah, you take them off when they're weaned and either feed them out or
sell them.
So I can keep. Sometimes I keep more and sometimes I keep less, but I can keep around 10 or 12 head of heifers every year for replacement because I try to sell the old cows when they're about 12 or 14 years old because it's just too tough for them to go. And then this last couple of years when prices got real good, I really culled down the old cows really
tight.
Really tight. So right now we've probably got about maybe 90 head of grown cows, and we got probably 20 or 25 head of those yearling and long yearling heifers. And a kind of interesting thing happened to Dobie and me day before yesterday. Because the river right at the house is dry now, and we had about 20 head of grown cattle and about that many calves were hanging right there at the house. Well, I took the tractor and dug a hole in the river where they could get a drink, but it keeps going down, you know. So anyway, about a week and a half ago, we tried to move that bunch of cattle in the hauled them over to the cattle guard where we've got a spring and a tank and everything. Well, they didn't even go drink out of that spring. They just came home. So Monday, Dobie and I, Sunday night, they all came in the corral easy. So Monday, Dobie and I hauled 4 loads of cattle over to the and
Slim
put them
Jim
in that corral.
Slim Jim, yeah.
And while we were hauling them over there, that shaking road, 2 of those young heifers had calves in the corral. When we got there with the last load, we had 2 more than we started with.
I think that was a good thing, though, because those mamas are going to stay with it, you know.
So, anyway, we left them overnight in the corral and turned them out on the water yesterday at noon, and we forced them to go over and drink out of that trough. So when Carol and I came out a while ago, they were all laying down in that corral right there by the road. So hopefully they're going to stay over there because there's got lots of good feed and lots of water.
There's
it's just
over there, yeah.
Just getting them to do it.
Yep. Okay, cool.
What else can I
now,
tell you?
When did you start the guest ranch operation?
Probably about the time they made it wilderness, which would have been about 94 or 90, somewhere along in there.
Well, it's been about 20 years, about 18, 20 years ago. So whatever it is now, about that long ago.
So did you work with the Chamber of Commerce at all to try and attract guests?
No. This was a serendipity. There was this gal, Dickinson's or Dickerson's, it was a book that they put out that was places, and my cousin lives in Prescott. Anyway, they kind of helped us to kind of get going on it, and what I did is I advertised in that book, and this gal was she'd come over from Germany, and she went over to California and saw the Horse Whisperer, and then she was going to go to the White Stallion at Tucson, Well, they were closed, so she called my cousin, and we didn't have, well, we had a phone service. I don't think we even had phone service. Anyway, she called my cousin, and so my cousin come down and asked me if we would be willing to take her.
And we just had one room in the bunkhouse.
Yeah, one room.
Fixed up.
Yeah. And the bathroom. We had the bathroom in one room. Otherwise, it was still a machine shed like the Hallelujah people had.
Right.
So she come, and her name was Jutta Besser. And she went back to Germany and wrote a story, and I have that story, but that she wrote a story about the ranch. And then about the next week, we got a call after that come out, and Dieter Burkhouse, he calls up. He had his daughter call up. My father wants to come and be a cowboy. And so we were on the couch in the living room sleeping, and we heard the phone. We had that
bag phone.
Yeah, we had the bag phone. And so we got up, and oh, it's German, you know, and so this gal, and so we said, well, sure. And so he came, he was our first guest, and then.
Well, actually, that Jutta Besser, she paid us.
Yeah, she was our first guest.
Yeah,
she did pay us, and she took pictures, and she made us a good story. And then her and Dieter put us in the Horse World magazine in Germany, and so we got this gal named Steffi Kiltz. And she is the one, she became our person over in Germany that helped to get us going. Well, at that time, we tried to get a little bit with the Chamber of Commerce, but I don't think they even figured we'd ever do anything. But pretty soon, and especially because of this Steffi, it got pretty well advertised, and people started calling them, and then it just multiplied from then on. And then they started putting us in the
they had
our name in there, you know.
We joined
the
chamber,
but we're now with the rest of Dude Ranchers. Yeah. We finally
you
came
finally
up
made
to,
it, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, I took a whole big folder into Julie. It was all these pictures and everything, and I did that because they had that was the other thing I did. They had a trade show in Florida, and I sent them this copy
travel
of
travel show.
Yeah, and so, and it was to help people, you know. And so there's a person that bid on ours, but they didn't ever come. But they paid the outfit for the money. But anyway, it got that much more advertisement, you know. But
and you, Joe, you never would believe the kind of people that have come to the ranch. All kinds of stuff. We had one group come from all the way from Korea, South Korea.
That was funny.
And that was they did a documentary of the ranch. And
I think that might have been through the chamber that might have sent them out.
Anyway, they made this little movie and sent us a copy of it, of what they did, but
it was a really...
Well, it was a wild time. They wanted a cow drive. They wanted to do everything. But they didn't want to do any of the work. They just wanted to take the movies.
So we had
of
to
it.
Do it in the back of the pickup.
So we had about 25 or 30 head of cattle right there close in the river. And so we gathered them and drove them up the road so they could be in the pickup and watch us driving the cattle. Well, after we got the cattle up to where O'Brien Wash went, well, of course, the cows, it was just me and...
It was you and Marie and Rob Roy. No, it was Travis. Travis was the one that come over. They had him come and...
Anyway,
drive the cattle.
You know where Amazon Wash comes in and O'Brien comes down? Well, that's where we lost all the cattle. So then they had me and Travis ride up on the hill and come riding down the...
Fast as you
in
could,
a lope,
yeah.
And a hollering and squalling like we were driving the cattle. They must have had us do that four or five times. Anyway, it was really interesting because we cooked them a T-bone steak that night, and they waited and had to take pictures of all. By the time they got ready to eat the steak, it was cold. And
the other funny thing, this was because people don't know about the desert. Travis was trying to show her how you could eat a prickly pear, and you know, and he started to, you know, give it to her. And he had it on his knife. And she just going to put that prickly pear in with the stickers on it and everything. No, no. He's anyway.
Your people from Germany, mostly they have already, they're pretty good horse people by the time they arrive here or not?
Some are, some not.
Well, yeah. Steffi kind of sorts them out for us. And we've basically, we've kind of got family in Germany now. In fact, Christian and Sabine, they were married in Munich and spent their honeymoon with us. And at the same time, there was a couple came here from Austria that got married in
Wickenburg. And
Bruce.
And Bruce was the best man and the judge, and there came out and
they got married in front of the railroad.
So that was a two couples.
Anyway, they were kind of some of our first customers. Well, Christian and Sabine, they've been coming back for 10 or 12 years or 15, and they're going to be probably our last group. They'll be here sometime in August for a week or two with their three children. And there's
that's
one
her family now, you know, after that many years.
There's one woman, she's Irene. Carol was just telling me about her. She was married to a Canadian, but she's a German. She's very smart. She could speak about seven different languages and was fluent in several of them. And we had these three guys come here from East Germany that couldn't speak a word of English.
Never been cowboys.
And it was the first time Irene had been here with us. And so I was taking them around, and Irene, she was my interpreter. And she'd say, "Wait a minute, Grandpa," and then she'd blah, 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 to them in German. And then, "Okay, now, Grandpa," and I'd tell them some more. So we were coming off of that trail that comes down to the house spring. Uh-huh. And so they had me take the camera down and film them as they come off of that rough place. And every one of them, when they came by, they'd tip their hat. And what they were doing, they were tipping their hat to their wives in Germany. But I didn't understand that until Irene told me later. That's what are them guys? Why are they tipping her hat at me?
At first, she didn't know if that was going to be good because she came out there to have her own thing, and then she turned in to be the interpreter, you know. And so, in fact, that because she was so great, she went in to Ben Saddlery, and he had a pair of chinks there that was really pretty. Karen had done them, and they had shown up at, I think, in Flagstaff or somewhere, but they were really nice-looking chinks. Anyway, Irene put them on, and she shook like this and all the fringe in it, and I thought, oh, my God, you know. Well, she didn't buy them, you know, and so what happened is we went ahead and went home, and then we had this bag phone. That was before it turned into digital, you know. So we called, and I called, who is the old, that lives out there?
I know what you mean.
L.A. He was still at work, but I told Bruce, I said, I have to have them chinks. And I said, it was her birthday. So L.A. brought them out to our place that night, and she was so shocked. But it was so special because just what she did and everything, but what she did for us with those Russian guys. Well, they were East German.
And she came back two or three times, and she was there when our nephew Sammy met Tamara.
Well, yeah.
And so that was a kind of an experience. We had a bunch of cattle, and they couldn't get up the hill with them in a trailer, and had to go get the tractor to pull them up over the hill after you cross the cattle guard and come up that steep place. So when it was hot, and we took them to the sale in Prescott, and Tamara and Irene
helped put rocks under the wheels so we could.
It was one of those deals. I don't know, Joe, whether you, unless you've cowboyed a lot, you just never lived.
The other thing that was so great is that Irene became the maid of honor for
Sammy and Tomorrow's wedding.
Tomorrow's wedding.
Who
in
is Sammy
Germany.
And Tamara?
That's well, Roy's nephew.
Tamara and Sammy, they live down in Morristown.
Morristown now. Yeah. Just no, Whitman.
Whitman. Anyway, Sammy, my youngest brother Kenny's boy.
Okay, that's all. Yeah.
And Tamara, she just won a some kind of several ribbons with her goats. She's got a little.
Yeah, they got a little farm going down.
They got a little farm going with goats and milk stock and all kinds of stuff. And anyway.
But we went to Germany for their wedding because that's where they had it. And this Irene was. And so Roy and I got to spend 2 weeks in Germany to celebrate all this. And we stayed with Christian and Sabine, this other couple. So.
Good.
So, but I just pinch myself every once in a while because this couldn't be happening to me.
Yeah, we just have a lot of it. And I'm sure a lot of people have all kinds of experiences.
Yeah.
But we have really
And another couple we really need to mention is Creed and Burva Botts.
Yeah.
Ever since they started their feed business here.
Double D Western Wear.
Way before it was Double D. Well, it might have been Double D, but they were over here by the farm. And they had the hay business, and we started dealing with them. And they've just been good, good people for us.
Good.
Yeah, and then at that same time.
So you've done most of your business in Wickenburg.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, almost all of our. We go to Costco to do our big shopping, but most all our business is all here in Wickenburg.
Well, they support us.
Sure.
And we need to support
them. And Bruce has built
five or six of our saddles.
Yeah, Bruce and I don't
maybe
know
more
Karen
than that.
Was,
he
she
built
left after.
One for Sammy and one for Tamara, one for Dobie and one for Kathy, and one for me. And
you gave me a new
and
one.
And I gave you a new one, so that's at least seven.
Yeah, anyway.
And he built Marie's, that's eight.
Anyway,
and
Bruce,
he built Deanne's,
yeah.
And he's built two for Dobie.
Yeah, so he's
so anyway,
really.
But Bruce, the other good thing about Bruce living where we are, if we need to order something, they won't bring it out there on a UPS or anything. So we get them to drop it by Bruce's, and
they hold it.
And
they
hold
it by you.
Yeah, yeah. So he's been a good friend.
Yeah. Now. You'd mentioned church earlier, and when you had the foster children, you all brought them all into town. Do you make that commute from the ranch to town on Sundays?
Not every Sunday.
Not so
now.
Much anymore. We used to all the time. But since we don't have any young people I just wanted them to have the right foundation.
Yeah. And we were members of the Southern Baptist up here.
Okay.
And then when we after we came back and we went up there for a little bit.
Yeah.
But mostly because we're getting older and that road's so rough and everything, we don't go in all the time. And then my son Charlie our son Charlie started going to the Sawara Church.
The Cowboy Church in the theater.
So, yeah, yeah, and so we go there about probably once a month or so. It's about whatever. But, you know, just, but we're Christians for sure. And I'll tell you, it was all our life. It's amazing. Do you know when we were up in Oregon that was when Mount St. Helens blew its top? And we watched it.
Yep.
We were on the south side of it, so we didn't get the ash very
much. Oh, but
much.
Marie was working in a hotel in Portland, and they had so much ash on them. She had a lot of trouble with that.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Last summer, we had quite a rain event here in Wickenburg. You got O'Brien Wash, and then you've got... what's the Amazon?
Well, you know,
tell me about some of the worst weather events that you've had.
Well, probably that one wasn't so bad. In fact, that day that it rained so hard, I had an appointment for my skin cancer, and we got caught going up the hill out of the river down here on the pavement that was running. I mean, you never saw it run like that before.
Yeah.
But back in the, I guess in the, about 2000 or 2002.
Well, in 97, they had a lot of rain. And that's when O'Brien, remember we had to park the thing and we had to walk in.
Because you called me on Wednesday because you had come up from the valley and you needed to get to the horses. And I didn't know of anyone that had an ATV to help you with. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, anyway, we've two or three times that's happened. I'd say at least two.
Yeah.
When it rained so hard that you couldn't get in and out. But it's never lasted more than a few days. Yeah. And we had that one that Carol's talking about. We had some people here from Canada.
Oh, that was on Gold Rush days,
It was on Gold Rush days, and we had some people from Canada.
Just 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And we heard on the TV that it was going to get 3 inches of rain up at Crown King. So I told Carol, you better get them.
They needed to get
to town, so... There's a couple of days before they was up. But anyway, Carol took them to town. Well, when she came back...
It was about 2:30 when I got back. They're right where the...
And Amazon was running so high, I took my little dozer and drove up and picked her up at where Amazon and O'Brien went together. And we parked the truck there, and then the water was up over the tracks when we were going back down to the house. It liked to wash their hay barn away.
Yeah, that's when we...
Because that took out the BLM parking lot that time.
Yeah.
And it took out part of your corral.
Yeah.
Okay. But we've had that corral taken out twice.
A couple of times. One time the darn guy was out there trying to save his logs. I was afraid they was going to take him too, but... A man in his poles.
That's right, especially an APS man. Tell me, you've been here a long time in and out of Wickenburg. How has Wickenburg changed?
I'm going to be honest with you, Joe. I really don't like the change in Wickenburg. I don't like all this development. I'm opposed to so many golf courses. It's sucking the water out of the ground, and it... You don't ever see anybody playing golf. I drive by about once a month or twice.
You're talking about going out north.
You're talking about the trilogy.
Not only that one, but the one out by Vulture Mine, Lost Cab. Anyway, you drive by there, you see people mowing the lawn and all that kind of stuff, but you don't see anybody playing golf.
Yeah, but that's always been there.
So. But that's been there forever. But I... There's a couple of things that's really doing good for Wickenburg in my mind. One of them is bringing in all these ropers. Mm-hmm. And you talk to some of the business people, that's really saved their life.
Yes.
And I think that's a good thing. But I'm not sure being a bedroom community to Phoenix is a good thing. But we'll just have to see because...
Well, one thing I think, honestly, though, I think Wickenburg's tried to keep its flavor. I really believe that. And the people, you know, the people who are, just like Bruce and Double D.
Well, and the people at Bash's we've dealt with.
Yeah, everybody knows everybody. They're still pretty.
And Brant McKeever, I've known him ever since he was
a little guy.
And his sister used to.
Ever since his daddy had the grocery store.
Yeah. Well, in fact,
there used to be a food store right here on the corner.
Right over here. And his dad had... That was before they ever did that. And, then Brant and his sister, when they built the new building, she was a cashier and a bunch of stuff in the store for a long time.
I think it's...
I don't know anything about the school system anymore, but I can tell you years ago I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah.
And
our kids, let's see, no, Marie didn't graduate. Nobody graduated because we were moving all the time, but they graduated somewhere else. Marie graduated in Prescott. But,
Charlie graduated in Oregon.
Yeah.
But anyway, I don't know what's going on with the school system anymore, but at the time they were going to school here, I thought it was pretty good. And I guess I really shouldn't really be argumentative about what's going on in the development, but I just kind of wish it would stay kind of like it used to be.
Well, that's the way everybody does, but I don't think it can because of
change is always going to happen.
Yeah.
Anything else you can think of that we haven't covered? I think we've done a pretty good job.
Well, what do you think? Do you have any?
We've talked about a lot of the people in town, a lot of the old timers that you've known.
Oh, I do have to say that Ike's is a nice place. Because my son is married to his sister.
All right.
Yeah, that's good. But, basically, here's the trouble when you're a rancher like we are, and it doesn't, I really miss Alco, but I guess now the dollar store is something that takes their place, but I haven't never gotten used to it yet. But it was one of them places when you went to post office you could do. The other thing is I really kind of liked the post office downtown years ago, but they needed to move it out there. And it's good, the people are good. And Safeway's good, and Bash's is good. We try to do, kind of divide it up that way. But I don't know what I was going to. I went off on the deep end here. I forgot what I was going to tell you about it. But anyway, I just forgot what I was going to say. So I guess that must be it.
I guess the other thing I think that's probably been good for Wickenburg, and you're part of it, is that the D.C. ride every year.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know that that's changed dramatically in the last, 40 or 50 years they've been doing it. But it's always been...
In Gold Rush days, it's good.
And I like the when they have the fiddle contests and all those kind of things. Bluegrass, I guess it is.
Yeah, yeah.
To me, that's a small-town effect, and I'd really like to see it remain.
Mm-hmm. At least keep that attitude. They may have to get big, but they have, to just keep that attitude.
Fireworks is a nice event, a real kids' event.
What's this?
The fireworks on 4th
of July.
You probably don't get in to see that.
But. No, that was the thing I was going to say. Because we live out so far, we used to come in. People say, do you know so-and-so or do you know so-and-so? No, I know the people at Double D. I know the people at the saddle shop. I know the ice cream place.
Sure.
And Bash's and that.
Jesse at Wickenburg Tire.
And all those different. But basically, I haven't ever got acquainted with a lot of Wickenburg people that live here.
No, and you wouldn't either.
Yeah.
Well, we used to when we were going to church here all the time. We knew.
We had met some of them. Yeah. That's how we got into the partly how we got into the Foster things too was, combination. That was a nice church when way back. Oh, I mean, it's a nice church now, but way back when the people were really nice, but they didn't have any young people, and they were really happy when we brought.
Okay. Well, thank you guys so much for coming in and doing this, and I think it's been fun.
I hope
I've enjoyed it.
Thoroughly confuse you with jumping around.
Well, I don't have all them dates yet in my head, but you sure
well,
have
listen,
jumped around.
Well, listen, Joe, if you need to know something. Because us talking off the top of our head, everything's all jumbled up too. But write me an email if you need some stuff. I can send it to you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Have a great day.
Yeah.